Sustainable Lens, Resilience on Radio. Hear an informed, intelligent and provocative discussion of sustainability issues every week. It's brought to you by Otago Polytechnic, where all students learn how to make their industries more sustainable. The regular panel of Samuel Mann and Shane Gallagher have been joined every week by a leading figure in the sustainability scene, politics, science and controversy on Sustainable Lens on Radio, tonight at 7 o'clock, and podcast on www.sustainablelens.org or www.oar.org.nz.
Welcome to Sustainable Lens Resilience on Radio, a weekly show on sustainability topics brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. The show is co-hosted by Shane Gallagher and me, Samuel Mann. This is the fourth from our series of conversations from CHI 2014 held recently in Toronto. CHI is the Conference on Human Factors in Computing, and tonight's guest is Oliver Bates. Oliver Bates is a PhD candidate at the Lancaster University School of Computing and Communications. His research focuses on understanding energy impacts in the home, for which he uses a mixed method involving lots of sensors and lots of talking and listening. He presented a paper on this work at CHI called Towards an Holistic View of the Energy and Environmental Impacts of Domestic Media and IT. So, Oliver Bates.
I'm with Oliver Bates, who is a PhD student at Lancaster University in the School of Computing and Communications. Welcome.
Hello.
What got you into computing?
Well, I guess my dad worked for a printing company, and he used to bring back like not broken computers, but obsolete computers. So from about the age of 8, there was always a computer in the home that we were doing up and fixing. And so a lot of time spent from then on computers, just becoming an expert before anybody else. So like 11, being able to do installations of operating systems and software that no one else, not even the teachers, that, you know, because there was before there was IT support, you know, like the early 90s, mid-90s. So I don't know, I just kind of felt like I was good at it, so I kind of followed it on through school. After A levels, I did a VTech, and then undergrad, I did computer science, and that's where I am now, looking at the impacts, in fact, of stuff that I enjoy using.
One of the issues that computing has is the gender imbalance.
Yes.
And people talk about things like the why people are getting into computing. And the boys want a good job and a big car, and the women want to change the world or to help people.
Okay.
Do you fit into that model, or?
I don't know. It's not about the money. I enjoy learning new things and having this idea that I'm helping somebody else learn a new thing or develop a new idea or direction. So, I know being at school was purely because it was like, you need a degree to do this, you need to do this to get to the next level. Because I worked in retail, I did not enjoy doing the same thing every day. But then as soon as I had to do my dissertation for my undergraduate, I realized that I really enjoyed doing something that somebody else wasn't doing, or something that gave me like an insight. I like understanding people as well. So I came from a kind of home sensing. Home sensing was what we started doing, putting motion sensors and light sensors and socket monitoring and stuff. So, and I just really, I don't know, enjoy learning how people are different, or what makes people tick, almost, make choices. Well, I guess it's choices now, but at the time, just like, people are interesting. I like that. Does that answer your question?
How did you find your way to Lancaster?
Because I did a BTEC, it's an equivalent of 3 A levels, but there's no exams. So I got a very good grade. But some universities don't recognise it as equivalent, so I couldn't go to some of the Red Brick or top universities. So I basically went through the top 10. Won't get into Oxford or Cambridge. I tried Bristol and Southampton. My best friend was at York, so I wanted to go to a different place. So Lancaster and Birmingham, Southampton and Bristol were the place I applied. And it was a toss-up between Lancaster and Birmingham, but Birmingham was too close, and they wanted me to do maths as a minor, and I kind of screwed up a maths at A-level, and hence going on to BTEC, because I didn't study for the exams, and then I felt I felt bad about myself, so I wanted to change things, so I focused fully on IT.
So, we'll come to the work you're doing now, but you said that you're looking at the impacts of computing.
Yes.
Where did that realisation or that interest get sparked?
So, I didn't really think about saving energy or energy impacts until the undergraduate dissertation. So, we put all these sensors into some halls of residence at Lancaster University, and energy was part of it. It was kind of, we were trying to understand how, does energy usage correlate with the number of people in a particular part of the halls of residence or something? And it was a project that was proposed to me by my supervisor in Lancaster. And I was like, that sounds pretty cool. And so I went with it, and then I didn't realize it was going to be so much learning and observing what people were doing, but I was just like, this is, sensor data is kind of cool. And then it turns out that there is variation and people do things differently. And then that's when I started getting interested in energy impacts, because it was like, maybe it isn't getting people to turn the light switches off or turning off their chargers, when they're not in use. What is using energy across throughout the day, and why? So I hadn't thought about it until we started doing the sensing and started asking people what to walk us through their everyday life, and we'd show them a graph of kind of like the energy consumption trace, and they'd be like, well, this is weird, I don't know what this is. Oh, and this point in the day I was here, and I was like doing my hair and stuff, so you could see like hair straighteners were in use at the same time as a laptop. And so it's not really, it wasn't just media and IT, that's just the paper I've done presented today and what my PhD thesis is focusing on it, but it was kind of anything that people do in the home and how practices or activities kind of cross over or are done at the same time.
Because there's been a lot of work on eco feedback.
Yes. So the idea was eco feedback.
Shower too long, or whatever.
Eco feedback is not particularly effective in reducing energy consumption. It's something between 5% and 15%. That was the number that we referenced in this paper, actually. I think at the top. So it was kind of like we should do something different. Why? What are people doing, and how can they do it differently? From an energy perspective.
Why? Yeah. What's the importance of it from your perspective?
Learning about.
Yeah. Why does it matter?
Why does it matter? I think in research, people kind of, I don't know. From what I've read, it was kind of like, we have this great idea, and so we've done this, and it can do this. But it's like, why are you doing this particular? Why would you redesign this thing or make a new one of these? Why do you? How is you just adding things in to you build a new thing, people buy the new things, and then they use the new things, and it's kind of like a self-fulfilling energy, growth almost. The design process, anyway. So, for me, understanding what people do and why they buy things or own things was interesting. Because what is the motivation between?
I learned a new term today. Except that I've forgotten what it is. But the new term was something like desired obsolescence.
Yes.
Is that what it's called? It's like wishing that the thing that you had would break so you could get a new one.
Yeah. Which is crazy. Right? That doesn't make sense. So, but we actually saw, I didn't really talk about this in the paper, but some people would have an old phone because they were used to using it, and they'd have like a newer smartphone. I think one of our participants, she had three different phones just because like she would contact certain people with this and she didn't like this. And then we gave her a third one for one of the studies we were doing. It's just like, that's kind of crazy. Like, But that isn't really the desired obsolescence. There's that, and I like the undesigning technology. So just through us or designers and companies designing new things, the kind of features fall out. But that might be a feature that I use quite heavily. So if I'm not an early adopter and I've got all this old technology that does things in a particular way, say if I hit I'm still doing VHS or something, right? How would I? And I didn't want to upgrade. What would I do? I'm kind of forced into this point where I have to buy one new thing, but that doesn't plug into my old TV or my old AV receiver or whatever. I have to completely buy all this new stuff. Because I can't use VHS, I mean, this is a very old example, I have to buy new things. Does that make any sense?
So, if you're not focusing on eco-feedback, you're just describing or trying to come to an understanding of what people...
Yeah, understanding is the word.
So it's trying to come with an understanding of how people relate to technology or relate to energy embodied in the technology.
So it's, people don't really think about the energy. So we never go in and say, do you care about the planet, or... are you doing things? What about sustainability? Because we don't want to change the way people do things. We want to understand exactly the way they do things, and then we kind of. So from our sensing and data collection, we work out that this is their energy. You know, they're losing this much electricity. They have all these devices. They've created this amount of Y amount of embodied carbon in the atmosphere, but also there's these other demands and impacts. So one example from a participant, whenever she would get ready for a night out or something, she'd be straightening her hair or drying it, she'd have a laptop on, and she'd be like streaming, watching video on demand or streaming some music or something. So like the impact there is not only the electricity of the laptop being used and the hair dryer and straighteners, but also this reliance on an internet service which has kind of changed the way she does getting ready for a night out. So because she can watch video on demand, she does do it. And that's really interesting how, maybe 5 or 6 years ago you wouldn't have done that. You'd just listen to a CD maybe when getting to go out. I can't really comment on how it's affected things socially between people, because our data is... It was very much individual kind of private dorm rooms. We didn't really look at public spaces, but that's kind of... I'm moving towards family homes, and I'm just seeing if there's kind of correlation.
So let's take a step back then. Describe this actual research. So the question is the broad one. The question is to better understand how people relate to the energy, or is it to the services, or is it trying to...
How are devices being used in everyday life?
In everyday life, okay.
Yeah, so it's an everyday life thing. So it's the devices, but then I use the word practices, but also you could exchange that with the word activity. So kind of why are those devices being used? So if you collect per socket energy data, you know something is consuming electricity, but you don't know exactly why it's on. Why there's variation, perhaps, in the energy consumption throughout the day. So, obviously, charge cycles for laptops. When it's charging, it kicks up and goes down. But if you look at a desktop computer, it has a baseline consumption, but then if it's doing high graphics, it'll spike up here. But we won't know without another level of monitoring or some sort of... We used interviews quite heavily to understand what people were doing. That
when people talk about... energy, primarily we're talking about electricity.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Does anybody other than a physicist understand a megawatt or a kilowatt in its pure terms?
I mean, no, and I think that's part of why eco-feedback doesn't... It's hard to relate to just an relatively arbitrary number, right? I mean, you can see on your energy bill that 3 kilowatt hours turns into 4 or 5 pounds or something. But what does that mean? If I want to, do I just turn everything off? Or how do I work out Why does that not... Yeah, no, I don't know. People don't... We didn't really show that to people.
It was that good documentary, wasn't it? The Human Power Station. Human-powered power station where they rigged up a house.
Where it was a so it's like a living light kind of thing?
Yeah, and had 100 cyclists powering it.
Oh, right.
Pedalling away for the weekend.
Huh.
And they thought that there was...
So was it to charge batteries or just to...
I don't know how they'd actually set it up, but they had them pedalling away and they had all of the appliances going and they said, but it's all right, we've arranged for them to go for a walk in the park because it's only going to last half an hour longer. And then they went out to the park leaving everything on. So the cyclists didn't get a break. You know, it could have been a setup for the show, but it was a really good thing for me just to see how hard is this stuff to produce.
Yeah. But it's different, obviously, in different countries as well. You've got different... people aren't even aware of kind of the energy mix. So, that term describes kind of how the electricity has been produced in the area. I mean, wind turbines are very visual. You can see those. Obviously, smokestacks. But why is there a smokestack? Is that a factory or is that a power plant? You don't know. I mean, from where we are, we have a mixture of nuclear, wind, and a bit of coal. And I only know that because I'm working in the area. But I don't think people even consider that. I mean, we've only looked at students and they weren't paying for bills or anything, so...
They're even further removed from it.
Yeah, precisely. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of a bad way to... When you're at a transitionary period in your life, in this kind of bubble, as a student, and you don't have to think about all these little things... Like, what kind of impact does...
So they really are just turning a light and turning up a switch and the light comes on.
And yeah.
They're not even thinking about, what's going to cost me at the end of the week?
No, I mean, some people do. So I think with lights, it's a bit different because I was brought up with, turn the lights out, using this much electricity. So we'd find that people would turn, communal lights off quite meticulously, I guess. But people didn't want to always do that because they wanted to... It's a navigation thing, right? Well, you're in a... I mean, the corridor was just straight, but it's like, I can't see anything, so sometimes people would leave the lights on. But with students, some people expressed kind of conservational behaviour, I guess. So they knew that leaving the lights on was bad, so they would turn them off,
Did you get any fights in the halls of residence about the lights Nazis turning all the lights off all the time?
Not really, but there's things that I've read and people have spoken about, like thermostat wars.
Mm-hmm.
So if you share a space with, even at work, I get this. So I don't want to be warm or I don't want to be cold, but the person sat next to the thermostat is the opposite of temperature, wants the opposite of the temperature I want. It's not even an energy thing, it's like, that's like a personal... comfort almost comes into it as well. It's like, I feel comfortable with these things on and these things around me, and that kind of becomes part of their everyday life.
So I started asking you about the actual method. So you put sensors into a hall of residence?
Yes.
Every socket or in a designated room or something?
So we did several studies, and the first one we didn't have enough sensors, so it was kind of... It wasn't every socket, so where there was multi-way adapters, kind of, where you could put four things in, we put it in the wall. So we could disaggregate on a per wall socket level there, but that was better than they had these energy monitors. And there was actually interesting, there was an energy competition going on at the same time. So people would see these numbers, and they were like, I don't know. Some flats didn't care, other flats, they would kind of be like, they were actually in the competition. But So we had, per socket energy monitors. We were using light and motion, so we couldn't get at the university infrastructure to kind of monitor the how much energy, electricity the light was using. So we took to working out when there was light, took into account the time of day and stuff.
So the light and it shouldn't have been the
light was on. And we went in, we recorded how many light bulbs there were. There's like four fluorescent lights in each for these, like above. It's like if all the lights were on in the room, it was like 300 watts or something, which is insane. Like in eight rooms in a whole, if everybody had all their lights on, it's just like kilowatts. So that's so it's an infrastructural thing.
That's the infrastructure, the spaces that they're in.
Yeah.
And then you did an inventory of what the students themselves had.
Yes. So we recorded all the devices they owned in their private rooms. We did... So a study from 2012 that we did... Well, the paper that kind of spawned all these more focused papers was in 2012... It's about service-oriented, accounting for energy-reliant services within everyday life at home. So that's where it started. So we put sensors on as many things as we could and tried to account for lighting, cooking, personal, like breaking down how the electricity was being, like what activities or services, so I use the term services, so was it entertainment or was it personal grooming in their private rooms? I said cooking, refrigeration as well, so we kind of monitored everything. But the shared spaces, there wasn't really much media in IT, and so that wasn't relevant for the work that I've done in this paper. What else? We had actually another paper we did. We was working out the energy impacts of food and cooking. So we had a motion-triggered camera above the oven that would take pictures of meals being prepared and cooked. And then, because we had the aggregate energy data, we could work out, and the timestamps of the photos, we could work out lengths of cooking sessions, amount of energy going into cooking sessions, if we subtracted the disaggregate plug data away. So that was another interesting thing that we did. So we kind of zoomed in on cooking, and then I've zoomed in on media and IT and personal practices. Heating one as well, but we didn't have any data on that. I'm not trying to promote my own work, sorry.
And the media, so the media work, so you're looking at the stereos and TVs and
things. TVs, laptops, computers, games consoles, that kind of thing.
And so then you have a model of how to assess the,
like an overall perspective?
Yeah, from the perspective of the actual use.
Yes.
You've got a model that's just got embodied energy?
Yeah, so there's four components. It's embodied energy, direct electricity, so electricity consumption, then indirect impacts, which is kind of anything that they do inside their private room that might cause more consumption outside of the home. So I used the example of using video on demand earlier. So if you stream a video, obviously there's a service in place somewhere in the world which serves the content, and then the content comes to the internet, comes to you, so that's kind of, you're having a, there's some demand and energy getting used there. And then the fourth component is the practices that kind of encompass practice is an interesting term because it's defined by the devices they own cause differences in these practices. I guess if you own a big TV, you use a big TV. If you use a laptop instead of a TV, you'd use that to watch TV. And so the kind of practice, I guess, lens kind of, it's all-encompassing, but it also affects these shifts between different kinds of consumption and impacts. And that's why understanding what people do is super interesting to me, because there is differences in the way that people do things, even if they are subtle, but they can create quite a variety of differences in the impact, the energy impacts.
The embodied energy part, so this is the stuff that's used in the manufacture, the whole life cycle thing, except its actual use.
Yes. So if you're talking about life cycle analysis as an area, what they'll do is work out several things. I kind of broke this apart to pieces for my report. So if you take a life cycle analysis that a company have done on their own products, they'll have the manufacturing and distribution, greenhouse gases. They'll have the electricity that it uses in the home. Also, the transportation factors into that. from where it's manufactured, all the parts are, to being put together, to coming to your home, so the electricity usage. And then sometimes they'll also include recycling, which is not something I've touched on, but generally that I guess it puts 5%, 5-7% of the embodied impacts anyway, kind of come back into it kind of takes 5% off the entire life cycle. But what we did, we just took the manufacturing and transportation costs, because we have our own sensor data, and obviously it's probably it's not always safe to trust the people who build these things. I don't think you could put indirect impacts into life cycle, because it's very, very subjective. And also, people don't think of, in terms of consumption anyway, they don't, you might think of like watching TV as consuming the video or whatever, but you don't think about how you watching TV has energy demand outside the home, because you're just kind of used to this infrastructure and service that you're provided with from the TV company or Netflix or whatever, you know. It's just there, I can use it.
So you take those embodied. The embodied energy. So there is a standard number that cell phone has got this much embodied energy.
Yes, and yes, yes.
50-inch TV has got this much.
That's right.
It's reasonably standard.
Not really. not really at all. It depends kind of on what level you go down to. I don't remember the exact terminology, but you can look at, it comes down to who's extracted what raw materials from where, how that was it treated, what plant it's come from, because every different, so if you go to where minerals are extracted and the companies that do it, they obviously have different impacts or more impactful ways of doing those kinds of things.
So it's not as simple as the weight of the thing equals it.
So that's kind of, that's the coefficient that I ended up using, because it was, I did a little review, and it seemed that it was the most conservative values, and because it uses weight, it's consistent across the devices. The casing usually is the least impactful part, because it's just a bit of plastic that's vacuum molded or whatever. But like the electronical components that make up the bulk or the screens tend to be the largest contributors of to embodied impacts, because they obviously, there's a lot of raw materials that go into there, and the process is quite
So you've got a table of, this is the embodied energy thing,
so,
and then you did the inventory with each person to say what stuff have you got.
Yes, what stuff have you got, and then we calculated how they impacted, what the embodied impacts were for each of these participants. Yeah,
and what are the patterns in that?
So, well. Obviously, the more devices you own, the more devices the people own, the larger the impacts. But we saw that the people with large or multiple displays, like a lot of devices that were connected to these displays, had like almost twice the embodied impacts of the kind of people, the middle range of participants. And then there was maybe 30% of our participants only had a laptop and like a couple of peripheral things, so some speakers.
Did you find any like patterns in that? Was it the people with not much, were they like travelling light and they were sort of efficient in their use, or couldn't they afford more stuff?
So we didn't ask them about economical background or anything, or we didn't ask the people who only had a laptop why they only had a laptop. I think the expectation when you come to university is, I shouldn't take too much, right? I'll take a laptop and my things, and then the more time you spend there over the 3 years, you kind of like, you move your life there almost. So I think, I couldn't say this generally, but definitely the guys, the top two with the largest embodied impacts were in their final year. They kind of,
So they've accumulated.
Well, definitely for our top one, Matt. But Henry, his desktop computer and the way he'd set that up, so with multiple displays and like a big AV receiver, because they're quite heavy things, like a desktop computer, which he'd customise himself, and these two big monitors, big like 15 kilo AV receiver, you know, that was stuff that he kind of always had. So he didn't have a laptop, but he had this desktop. And so I don't know if there is kind of correlation there, but I think it depends what you... We didn't ask them why.
Did you have people that, for whom those things were more than just a function? That they were... They had the top-end stereo, and is that more impactful? It's not necessarily bigger, is it?
No, I don't know the top-end... So that's another way of looking at life cycle, the carbon emissions of it, but it impacts is you can do it on price. So if something's really expensive, it has a more, you give it a higher amount of embodied carbon. But we chose the weight way of doing it. So we don't have like super detailed inventories of like model numbers and age and things. So we kind of made an assumption that the laptops are kind of the same. So you can see how it lines up.
Did everyone have a phone?
Yes. Some people, like two or three people, had multiple phones, actually.
Were they all smartphones?
Yeah, yeah. They were. Is that unusual?
No, just...
Well, you know, young kids with their contracts and their...
And they all had a computer?
Yes. All of them had laptops apart from one participant who had a big customised desktop computer. So I think it's kind of part of the university life now, you know. Expected to have a computer. So... You can do with a laptop what you could do with a huge desktop computer or a TV or whatever.
Smartphone, some sort of computer, possibly an external monitor.
Yeah, but not for everybody. A lot of people had speakers. So 16 or 17 of the participants had speakers. So 33.
So some people had more than one computer.
Yeah, a couple of people had a desktop and a laptop, but no one had two laptops. Someone got a new one halfway through, but we didn't reflect that.
And then some sort of stereo.
Yeah, so not all. So some people had just like portable PC speakers, but then maybe 15% of people had like a stereo, like an AV receiver kind of thing.
Okay, so carrying on the story, so you knew the embodied energy.
Yep.
You know what they've got, so you could multiply those out and work out.
Yeah, yeah.
How much the impact of the embodied stuff that they had in their room.
That's right.
Right. Next trick is what they did with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that you got from
The per socket monitoring. So all the devices were monitored, and then that links back to. Well, so then once you know the direct consumption, you can compare that to the embodied of the individual device or the entire inventories for a participant, and that yielded some interesting results. So people with the largest inventories tended to have the largest amount of energy consumption because you've got more stuff, you use more stuff. But then people who had similar kind of, so if they had a games console and a display, this is an example. One of the participants had a bigger display, so his embodied impact is like a third more than another participant who had like a 19-inch monitor. But this one with the smaller monitor would use their games console and their television for two or three times more kind of use time. The guy with the bigger screen had a larger embodied impact, but a smaller direct impact than this person who had the smaller screen because. Of times of use, but the guy with the big screen only used his console for video games, whereas the participant with the small screen would use stream video content through her Xbox as well, because her laptop didn't actually. Well, she had problems playing video back on her laptop; it didn't struggle, so she would do it all through her Xbox, which led to like longer times of use, which. More direct energy consumption.
As a general rule, bigger things use more power?
I'd say more things use more power. But so you could have a collection.
Stereo would use more power than a
speakers. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Lots more.
Yeah, yeah, a lot. Yes, lots more. Well, an MP3 player or a smartphone you charge once a day or a couple times a week, assuming you used it for 4 or 5 hours a day. You know, the MP3 player anyway.
Did the people that tended to have fewer things also have the smaller things?
Yes.
So as they went up in the number, they also got bigger stuff.
Yeah, so that's how it tended to be.
Because I'm thinking about, and were those things connected? I'm thinking about our TV. When we turn the TV on, the Blu-ray player comes on,
yeah,
and the stereo comes on, and so all those things are running, even though what we're just trying to do is watch the TV. Right.
Okay, so the people at the low end, they some of them would have speakers, call them hard drives, or maybe yeah, cameras and a printer or something, because that's kind of stuff you bring to uni. But those things weren't turned on all the time. So a printer or speakers you would only use when you would, so speakers to have louder or better sounding audio. A printer only when you would want to print something. But people with more stuff or connected devices, which we call constellations in our paper, actually. So constellations of devices that are kind of physically connected, that are used together at the same time. And that obviously increases how much impact in. It increases the impact for a given activity. So watching TV, if I watch TV with a TV and audio receiver and a DVD player, that has uses multiple times more energy than just kind of watching a video on my laptop. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, is there a multiplier?
It really depended on, so no two devices use same amount of, like, well, they do, it depends on, you, like, if they had the same model, I'd expect that it would use the same amount of electricity given the same use time, but that models and speakers and stuff like that, there's a lot of variation in it, and obviously use time plays quite heavily into that, so if you...
Yeah, nice and silly for me again. If I've got more things,
right,
I tend to have bigger things. So they have more impact for both of those.
Yeah.
And I tend to use them more?
Not necessarily. But use
They're hungrier when I'm using them.
Yeah, they're hungrier, but you don't necessarily.
We
both watch 4 hours of video a day, but you do it on your laptop, and the only thing you own is a laptop. It's just going to kind of get lost in the power consumption of the laptop. But if I'm on my laptop doing, I don't know, my emails or something, and I'm like, oh, I want to watch 4 hours of TV on my big TV plugged into my audio receiver, that's like an additional, that kind of just kind of goes on top of everything else.
Right. Did you look at ghost load when things are on and I'm not using them?
Some people talked about that. You can definitely see discrete on-off periods, and sometimes particular components of constellations would go to sleep and you'd still see like a large monitor, but like the monitor would turn off, but like a games console would still, or a connected computer would still be on. So we didn't identify that or discuss it too much, because we without actually either doing a study where we watch the, like, sit in the participants' room and watch them all the time, or having some sort of monitoring on each of those devices, I wouldn't say the data would be reliable about that.
What's the relationship? Oh, we haven't done the other one. You said four.
Indirect.
Indirect. Tell me about indirect.
Okay. So
what did you find?
So we didn't actually. So without some sort of network monitoring or monitoring on a computer, it's hard to kind of quantify that. So my big thing is quantifying everything, so I can make an informed decision on what is most impactful and how those impacts change.
So you're making assumptions like, if the computer's on, let's assume half the time's on the net.
Well, no, we didn't actually quantify indirect.
Okay.
So that's in our we comment on it, how people spoke about. So for that was more a difference in practice. So if someone used a DVD player that's only using electricity in the room, obviously they had to buy the DVD. Which is a different kind of impact. The depth of impact is almost. You can keep going to different levels, but we So people would speak about social networking. So they're using the social networking service and things. So we knew that that was a regular occurrence throughout the day. It was kind of intermittent. You know, as opportunities kind of arose, they would, you know, if they got a notification or from on their phones or their computers, they would interact. But people spoke about the ways that they did watch video and listen to media, and that would tend to be through either having downloaded something or streaming it from a website or service online. So we are unable to actually quantify that because we don't know how much data was transferred through to the computer. We don't know actually how long these periods and then how these periods of like using these services were. So we kind of say that this is actually important. And the more internet-enabled devices and portable devices people are owning, means that they're going to be relying on these kind of services more and more. I mean, data centers, people like Google think about obviously the capacity keeps growing and growing, but so the energy consumption keeps growing and growing. They're trying new, more green fit ways of, you know, putting themselves in, using hydroelectric and stuff, but people don't think about indirect as kind of a cost, an energy cost. They kind of just see there's a service there, so I use it. But what really interests me is how does video on demand compare to broadcast television, for example? But it's not even broadcast television anymore because, you know, your TV providers are doing all this on demand stuff, and you can record more and more things. So it's quite a complex thing, but we don't have any data on that kind of stuff. But we do know that people do rely heavily on things on the internet.
For any given device,
okay.
So say a small device,
okay.
A phone.
Yeah.
Do we know what percentage is direct and what percentage is embodied?
So compared to one another? So we...
Are they the same? About the same? Or
No.
Embodied?
So embodied is... say you own the phone for a year, the embodied does dwarf the amount of direct energy, which is common throughout. So as you got more higher embodied... a device with a higher embodied impact, it also have... But not... It would imply that it would use more energy, and it did from what we saw. So a laptop uses more electricity than a phone to charge. And phones have quite short charge cycles, really. I know people are complaining about having to change their phone every day, but you charge your phone for 2 hours at 6 watts. That's nothing compared to charging a laptop for 8 hours a day at 50 to 60 watts. Like it's complete noise, right? So I couldn't speak to percentage wise.
But what that suggests to me is that keeping it for a bit longer is going to be is far more important.
Yeah, longevity is definitely across everything. But obviously, keeping more high impact devices for longer is more important, I'd say. But then you get into the debate of if it's more high embodied impact and it has a higher electricity demand, at what point does it become what point do I go, alright, this device uses way too much electricity, I've had it for too long, I should buy a new, more efficient thing, but therefore creating more, releasing more carbon gas.
Right. So there's some sort of sweet spot or the tipping point of somewhere.
We haven't discussed that tipping point in our paper, but there is.
But how do I find it? Not in the literature, but for any given device.
Okay.
Is there a rule of thumb as to what this...
So
how does somebody find that sweet spot?
So you want to calculate your embodied emissions using whichever source of literature you want. There's some great books and some very great research papers. But you need to know the times of use of the device. So for a laptop, say you charge it 8 hours a day, every day, and it uses 50 watts across those 8 hours. You want to work out... I don't know, for me I'm like I want the direct energy to at least be greater than the embodied before you know, I don't want to have had something been created for me to throw away before I've kind of matched its emissions, because it almost feels like a waste. I don't know why that is, but if that makes some sense. I want it to... It sounds like I want everything to be double the impact before I start using it, which isn't what I'm saying. But it's kind of getting your impact's worth, I guess. Because if you own a smartphone and then it's direct, I don't know, this is a very small impact for a smartphone. But so say you own a laptop and you only use it for a year, and its direct impact's not even a quarter of its embodied, it kind of feels like a bit of a waste to get a new one, right? It's different if it's broken.
How sensitive are those numbers?
If
someone came out and said this laptop is 10% more efficient, does it make much of a difference, or is the
do I use it 10% more of the time? It's very subjective, but depending on the person.
If there's so many different ways of calculating the embodied energy, that you're going to get 10% variation in that.
Oh, way more actually when it comes to embodied impacts, because people, it depends how deep you go on the life cycle analysis. So like I said, you have to look at countries and providers of materials, and then you have to get like to the factories and kind of work out per billion parts how do I break up the energy that goes.
So I'm going to come up with a rule of thumb here. So if it's using more than its embodied energy per year in direct energy, then I should try and keep it.
If it's using more?
Yeah, if there's more direct energy. I'm trying to say if it's
I don't know, I think a few people get fixated on reducing energy electricity bills. Mm-hmm. But if you're like, oh, I can reduce my electricity bills by replacing all my media and IT devices with new ones that are 15% more efficient, I'd say that is a completely misinformed decision. Because you're now, I don't know, assuming the worst case, this stuff gets thrown out, it goes to a landfill, or it gets burnt up and recycled. Some parts won't get recycled. But you've bought a whole new thing, creating thousands of more kilograms of CO2 in the equivalent in the atmosphere, just because you can save 15% a month on your energy bill. That's a bad decision, I would say.
Did any of your participants still have CRT monitors?
One had a CRT TV, but it was with an integrated DVD player. But I think that's just her.
Was it massively?
Was heavy.
In its use? Because I'm thinking at work, the CRT's got... We had new CRTs, like hundreds of them, some of them still in wrapping.
Really?
That didn't get deployed because these flat screens were more efficient. But I would have thought that if something's been built, then you should use it. But maybe not.
Yeah, maybe... No, I mean... I don't know the number off my head, but I can't comment, I'm afraid. But it depends, manufacturer to manufacturer... And then obviously CRT, I think, I'm pretty sure CRTs do use more electricity, but I'm not sure by how much more. Because I haven't looked at the numbers in all the world. So.
But if something was to come out, let's say that an unnamed smartphone manufacturer with a fruit on the side of it was to come out with a new version of their thing.
Yep.
And it's, not only is it better, but it's more efficient.
Okay. Are we talking smartphones?
Yeah.
Or are we talking laptops?
I'm talking a smartphone.
Okay.
Is it as bad as we might think it is to get a new one?
No. No, not at all. They barely use much electricity being charged. If you use the coefficient we used and it go to weight, you know, smartphones are getting lighter and lighter. But
they're cramming more in.
Yeah, I mean, it's between... So the number we had was, I think it was 100 kilograms. For, like, the high-end stuff, Apple reported quite a high number. But we have... Where is it? It was about around... the number that the guys who used the coefficient from decided it was around 10 to 12 kilograms of CO2, based on weight. So, but if a laptop's 200, I'd say that's a more important comparison to draw. So do we want smaller devices? Instead of buying a new laptop, why don't I just use my smartphone and have some cool peripheral that can plug into my TV, right? That buying that peripheral is a way better decision if all I want to do is watch movies or something. All I'm going to do is stream a video from the internet, why would I buy a new computer, like a computer that plugs into my TV, when I could just use my phone or some peripheral?
And
I know this is I'm not trying to avoid the question, but it's hard to say, because when it comes to electricity usage, it's different participant, you know, person to person. Sorry, not everybody's a participant in my study. So it's to do with times of use. So opportunities, it's to do with, not everybody spends 12 hours a day watching TV. So if that's what you do, then you're going to incur a lot more energy consumption. But if it's not, and you're like, oh, this new TV just came out, I'd say, well, you only watch the TV for 2 hours a day. Is it a sensible decision to go out and buy the new one? Like, are you going to get that much more of a boost of quality of experience by doing
that? Is it too hard for people? Like, how are... I'm going to say normal people. How are normal people supposed to work this out? If they're trying to use their energy smarter, how are they supposed to find out whether or not this thing is better than that thing? Or
they'd have to do a lot of reading.
There's no obvious rules of thumb.
I don't think there is. And I think that's part of the problem when it comes to eco-feedback. It's not like a blanket you can apply. Because you might have a fridge that's 20 years old. I know this isn't media IT, but it's going to be way less efficient than my brand new one.
But as a rule of thumb, you had some people that were massively more impactful than others.
Yes, because they own more stuff, and and because they own more stuff, they tend to use more stuff.
What's the order of magnitude on? Is it order of magnitude?
For the largest, we got daily consumption, and for the largest guy, it was almost 5,000 watt hours. Which is, you know, obviously nonsense if you don't understand watt hours. And the smallest was around 164. So
5,000 watt hours. That's 100 watt light bulbs.
In
24 hours. How many light bulbs is that turned on? We could work that out.
It's around. I think it was around 800 watts throughout the day. I think that's what it comes to.
So five. Is that eight?
So that'd be. What kind of light bulbs are you
using? I'm talking about old style.
Like 60 watt one.
Yeah, 60 watts. So 60 watt light bulbs. So that's 800. So, more than 12 light bulbs turned on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whereas the lowest guy would be 2 and a bit, which is what you're saying. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry to have gone like. I start discussing things and thinking about things in my own brain. I'm not very an on track thinker. I apologize.
But that's a huge difference.
Yeah, that is a huge difference.
And those people that were using less didn't appear to be in a sort of an energy poverty situation. They were still using their computer for writing essays.
Throughout the day. You know, times of use for laptops were actually very similar. It was between 7 and 10 hours a day, like throughout the day almost, waking day.
If the difference is 300, is it 300 watts? 300 watt hours? Is that per day?
Yes, so this is per day.
Or what's the smallest one? The smallest one's tiny.
The smallest one's 164 and the largest is 4,135, right? It's a major difference. But
so you haven't tried to assess the utility, have you? So, you know, what's the satisfaction they're getting from that? But it'd be hard to imagine.
Well, we kind of did, but we kind of used the term connoisseurs to describe people who deliberately went and got more devices. Because they enjoyed doing things a particular way, so having a big TV because they wanted to watch a big TV in a small dorm room, or playing video games on several games consoles instead of on a laptop, you know. So we don't have like a metric for assessing that, but we are aware that people make choices because they want a better quality of experience.
But they're only using, I've just done the math, I've used the calculator, they're using 3%.
the little people,
yeah,
using
3%
of
these
what the big people.
The two largest consumers actually make up, I think it was around 40% of the total consumption we saw across the day three participants, which is huge, right? And they do have large inventories, but what I'm saying, the variation in the middle comes down to times of use. The times of use for people who didn't leave stuff on for long times really factored into how much direct energy they used.
But in terms of planning interventions, the bang for the buck is to deal to those top users.
Yeah. So maybe contextualizing, say, hey, look, you don't have to think about, I mean, that's one thing to do, telling the little guy that he doesn't really need to think about energy consumption as much. And maybe that's an important, I mean, I know on energy bills you get there, you are three times what your local average is. But it's like, I don't know what my local average is. I don't know what that really means. We're four, like, adults living together. Everybody who's local to me is like two people with a really old TV, and they go out all the time. It lacks a lot of context. And how do you react to that? It's just like, oh, it's just a number that the energy can provide us.
Did you present these numbers back to the participants?
No, we did not.
You didn't put like a sized circle on their door or something?
It wasn't anything to do with interventions. It was just monitoring and understanding why people did things. So, it's interesting, the interventions thing.
But presumably you talked to these people, even in passing.
Yes, we did. No, we had.
The heavy users seem extravagant. Were they aware that they were extravagant?
They knew that they were worse. I don't know, we didn't kind of ask them like on a scale of extravagance, mm-hmm. I guess, but they knew they had more stuff because these people lived together, right? But I think people could justify, with them not being bill payers, they could justify, well, I've got this on because I need to be able to access this other thing, or like the consumption was almost a product of how they configured their things. So it's like, I have this server on, which I need to be on all the time because I need to do backups, or I'm sharing media with the guy in the next room, or stuff like that would come out. Here, with the possibly with the largest consumption, but he'd also kind of layer devices on top of each other. So I described here, like we're using a laptop while I was watching a separate TV. So that kind of amplifies direct energy loads, especially mm-hmm. if the TV and the whatever device is connected to it use five times the energy that just the laptop does. So if you're using a computer that is doing something, getting video from somewhere and is putting it on TV, that increases direct impact.
Skip Lattner, the American energy policy analyst,
yeah.
He talked to us a few weeks ago about our society is currently running at about 14% efficiency, energy efficiency.
Right.
Big chunk of that is transport, which is not
energy. Oh, yeah, no, I didn't get it.
And he says that it's got to be up, you know, we talked to Jerry Carrington as well, retired professor of physics at Otago University. He said that we should be aiming for something like 65%. Any higher than that, it starts to get, you know, too hard to make any real changes. It seems to me that there's a lot. If two users are using 40% of the energy,
yep,
and they're not getting that much more utility than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem to me and if that multiplies out not just to student halls or residents but to ordinary houses, which might be a bit of a leap, but
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it necessarily would be a leap. I mean,
those extravagant students are probably more like
an ordinary house. That's what I mean. But then when you start looking at households, do you look at the individual or do you look at the whole household? What if it's, you know, people living together? Like, you know, young professionals living together, or if it's a, you know, family with two kids and parents. I mean, accounting for an individual in a side of shared space is really difficult to do. I mean, you could monitor the devices in the rooms, but who's to say who's in the rooms? But that was kind of the question. But these guys with the largest consumption, I mean, if you were to design an intervention, it would be like, hey, look, you're using this much energy. Do you care about it? As soon as somebody doesn't, if they don't care, then how you can't really force them to make any changes. But they need to change the way that they the way they do these things. Because obviously, our lowest participant can survive with just a laptop and just speakers. Why can't they? Like, if they're doing pretty much all the same sorts of things, like watching music, watching TV, and doing the work, why do they need all these things? So, if you wanted to design an intervention, you kind of either want to look at some sort of low-impact smart way of controlling times of use, so it's really tight. So these high-impact devices are kind of only used when they're really, really needed to be. Or you want to tell these people that have some policy, obviously policy is kind of a hard thing to strive to change, that says, well, if these people can do it one way and are happy, I don't want to be the guy who's like, you need to throw out all your stuff because that's a waste. But that's the kind of, you need to be extreme sometimes, I think. If you want to make a 65% more, you want to reach like 65% efficiency instead of 15, that's the kind of radical thing you need to kind of push for, I guess. But then... How much is media and IT, like domestic media and IT, and this is kind of going against my own work. No, it's not actually, I think it's complemented. So you've got domestic media and IT and its consumption, but what about all these internet services and infrastructures and how much energy they're consuming and all the negative environmental effects they're having? I mean, if you put it in that perspective, you could argue that, oh yeah, I do use 40 times what the guy down the road does, but I'm nothing compared to some big company that does a lot of cloud or internet stuff, you know, like, why
would But if, I? They, if that big company is distributing that impact around 80 million people or whatever it might be, it's small per person.
Yeah.
What's the relative impact of the other two, the direct and embodied impact, so, and the indirect, just as a ballpark, do we know?
I had
if I'm using my laptop, playing on Facebook.
I can't remember the numbers, but there's a great paper by Dan Shine from University of Southampton, I think, or was it Bristol? It's University of Bristol from last year at WWW. And they talk about the impact. So from like the Guardian newspaper's perspective of energy consumption, and I don't remember the, so that's the kind of illustrative example I used in my talk today, was this kind of, I use the numbers but I don't have them in my paper.
That's okay.
But that's maybe
okay, three questions to finish then.
Okay.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
No. I would like to be after I'm kind of too ingrained in my own lifestyle. I enjoy the research I do and understanding people, but I don't know. I'm comfortable, and I know I'm not the worst. I know I'm not the best either, but I'm kind of comfortable just plodding along, I guess. Oh, thanks for that question.
So, what challenges have you got for the next couple of years?
In my research, or...?
Yeah.
So it's understanding and quantifying that indirect impact, because you know, with a lot of people working on distributing content throughout the internet and making bigger, faster internet, I think it's more and more important. With more devices being bought that use the internet at home, it's more important to understand, I think, from a domestic perspective, how demand is being placed on these services. So that's kind of what I'm doing. And also understanding lifetimes of these devices in the home. So not just the impacts, but the choices that are made throughout a person's, I'd say device's lifetime.
So you didn't ask in this study, you didn't ask how long they'd had that phone.
Or what made them. So I think what's more important is kind of inspiration or influence behind why. this device was bought over this other, any other kind of device. Do you think about energy and power when you buy this, or was it because your neighbour had a big TV? That's particularly interesting to me too.
Okay, last question. Do you have any advice for our listeners? Is there any one thing that they could do that could make a real impact?
From a home, a domestic perspective, or just
anything
in general?
It could be nice to each other, or it could be don't buy another TV.
I'd say discuss how you do these things at home, and look at your neighbours and your friends and families, and not to kind of make yourself feel better because you're as bad as each other, but to see people who do things differently and acknowledge that they get on just fine by having a lesser, in air quotes, quality of experience, but it's okay for them. You don't necessarily need a 70-inch TV with the latest speakers and things, but maybe you do, but maybe you should. Maybe you want that between a bunch of people, and maybe that's a decision you should make in a more communal kind of decision, that you come together like, well, we don't all always use our big TV, maybe we can share, or maybe we should have one in a communal space. I like the idea of sharing, but also I like the idea of my own time, my own space, and my own stuff, so I'm conflicted on that one, I guess, myself, but it's just an interesting discussion to have.
So have the discussion.
Yes, just have the discussion to start off with.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you for being fascinating.
Sustainable Lens on Radio.
You've been listening to Sustainable Lens Resilience on Radio, a weekly show on sustainability topics brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. The show is co-hosted by Shane Gallagher and me, Samuel Mann. Tonight's guest was Oliver Bates from the University of Lancaster. We've been talking about his research into energy impacts in the home. We broadcast on Otago Access Radio, oar.org.nz, and podcast on sustainablelens.org. There we're building up a searchable archive of conversations with people from many different fields who are applying their skills to a sustainable future. In our conversations, we try to find out what motivates them and what it means to see the world through a sustainable perspective, through their sustainable lens. You can follow the links on sustainablelens.org to find us on Facebook to keep in touch. You can find us on iTunes as well. That was Sustainable Lens. I'm Samuel Mann, and I hope you enjoyed the show.